Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get this show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it,
baby. Let's go. Wait, see.
Welcome to the Rookie Fever Podcast. I am Mike, the Fever's Finero, and I have a special guest lined up for us tonight. But before I introduce him, let me tell you what we're doing on this episode. I truly hope Rookie Fever is one of your already must listens, but if not, we're going to be here every single week bringing you at least two 2022. Wow, that's a lot of twos. Rookie profiles every week now until the NFL draft. That's a long time. So if this is your first listen, make sure to subscribe so you do not miss one. These profiles are nice, short shows packed with information on this incoming 2022 rookie class. This week's special guest I teased you about earlier is none other than Eric Kortz. You can find him on Twitter at EK Baller. He's a senior writer and assistant editor for the Dynasty Nerds at Dynasty Nerds. Eric, how the heck are you?
Good, man. It's good to be here, Finaro. And just for the listeners, nobody does the rookie profiles better than Rookie Fever. And I love doing this show. You guys do this so well, and I'm always psyched to be part of it.
Dude, man, thank you. I really think the special sauce is the guests that we bring on, like you, Eric. And I think the other special sauce, to be quite honest with you, that no one really has learned about yet, because we say it every time, so they might as well start copying us, is we don't come in with an agenda, Eric. We let you pick the player you want to talk about. So you come in hyped, full of information, ready to go, instead of trying to do it the other way around, where we're trying to find specific guests for specific players. This has really worked right for us. Are you ready to get into this?
Yeah, let's go, man.
All right.
Rookie Fevers. Rookie Player Profile Edition.
This year, I chose to talk about Texas A&M running back and future day two NFL draft pick, Isaiah Spiller.
Nice. Not related to CJ Spiller, by the way.
Not related to CJ.
So I obviously do a little research before all these shows so I can have somewhat of a base. And this freshman year breakout player in 2019 had 946 yards. It was 10 touchdowns.
10 touchdowns is freshman. 9 is a sophomore, and then only 6 this year.
And 29 catches, nothing to sniffle out there either, for 203 yards. What does this freshman performance mean to you?
Man, I love guys that can get on the field and produce early. It's not as strong a signal for running backs, say, as it is for wide receivers, but it's good, man. Like, this kid came in at 18 years old, 17 and a half, 18, into the SEC and run dudes over. And, you know, I love it. For me, average yards from scrimmage is a big signal that I look at that produces a cohort that I like. And, man, this kid coming on and dropping touchdowns and dropping, you know, 1,000 plus yards every year of his 3-year career. For me, that helps, is one of the things that's put him, you know, in an elite cohort of prospects for me.
So this is what I looked at later, though. So I don't care who you are, and you can tell me different, because you already kind of changed my mind about the breakout age. I you always hear about breakout ages in the wide receiver, and now I'm tempering it a little bit with the running back. I mean, sure, it's not bad to see, but this bothered me a little bit, and then maybe you can tell me, maybe to not be so bothered. I was kind of looking for some progression from 2020 and 2021, and all I really saw was a flat line. Now, he started off hot, so the flat line is high, but it never really went anywhere. It was pretty much the same statistics all 3 years he was in college. Is there anything, any red flags there, concerns? Would you rather have seen something different?
Yeah, I mean, clearly you would rather see him, you know, have taken 70% of the running back carries and a 15% target share and put up 2,000 yards a season, right? But I think part of that, and I'll just say, this has been like, I've gotten in Twitter wars in the past month about Spiller, about, you know, his lack of exceeding the YPC of his teammates, you know, the lack of progression, like you're saying, the inability to completely dominate the workload. And, you know, I have several rebuttals for that. And again, I'm like, and not in a manner that like I'm trying to fight or, you know, like put the dukes up, but that there's counterpoints that I think are useful information as well. And like, and again, those are like totally valid concerns, right? They're not things that you should just like brush off and ignore. Mm-hmm. They're useful data points. But for me, I think one of the things that's important is that, I guess people are acting like he was, you know, being outperformed by Jaggy, you know, like college everyman guys. And that's not really the truth. The other guy that's taken a bunch of the rushing back share, running back share last year and this year, Devin Akane, and I'm probably butchering his name because I don't think I've ever heard anyone say it out loud, is an NFL player. I mean, the kid is a world-class sprinter with solid running back ability, right? So I think that's important. Like Spiller has been a workhorse, but in a lot of ways, he's been in a committee in college as well. And I think that's something that Jimbo Fisher likes to do. And I think it also is reflective of the fact that he's had elite talent. He's had other 4- and 5-star guys in that backfield with him. And then, you know, this year, again, you know, like you would have liked to see the touchdowns stay up and the efficiency, but I think it's also important to remember that they had I don't know if the kid was a rookie or a sophomore, but, and I'll probably butcher his name too, but Zach Calzada, you know, came in and he went from, you know, a future NFL player, you know, at quarterback to, you know, a guy really just learned the ropes on how to play the game at the college level. And, you know, that's going to hurt efficiency as well, in my opinion.
I mean, I seem to remember a guy just from last year's class that didn't dominate the carries that everyone seems to freaking love now. Javonte Williams was sharing with Carter all season long and was 50-50 right down the middle. I think it was just Javonte Williams with the TDs, to be quite honest. I think almost every statistical piece of information was identical between the two. And I'm sure people this time of year were making comments about that. Why didn't he dominate all the shares? So I think what you're saying, if I'm hearing you right, is sure, it's a data point. Yes, I would rather have seen something different, but let's not make such a big deal out of it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to look at, you know, red flags, but also good to look at like what he can do and what he did do. I mean, and, you know, just like on the surface coming into the SEC and putting up over 1,000 combined yards a year, putting up, you know, a total of 36 touchdowns in 3 years. Like those are impressive data points.
And catching the ball. He's got 20 plus receptions in all 3 years.
Yeah. In an offense that often had a running quarterback as well. Right.
Wow.
And I think
wow.
that's important to remember too. Like, you know, cause you can look at Breece Hall caught more balls than Isaiah Spiller did. Right. But volume's not everything in the receiving game.
Gotcha.
And Spiller can do it and he can do it really, really well.
Is Spiller your RB1 in this class?
I've gone back and forth on this. I was firmly Spiller RB1 at the beginning of the season. And I'll tell you why. And I like Breece Hall a lot. And I'll say this for context, like in my model and my data scouting that I do, Breece Hall is better. He's almost locked into an elite tier of players. Like there's a few data points that are a little bit lower than like a J.K. Dobbins or, you know, a Taylor, ETN that are like elite prospects in this model. But like not much, as opposed to Spiller in that model is a very, very good prospect, is, you know, landing in a cohort just below that with guys like Najee Harris and DeAndre Swift, people that you still want to be in a group with, right?
I was like, say, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, right. If that's your crowd, you're running with a good crowd.
Yeah.
So I've been back and forth. I feel the need to stick up for Spiller, although less this week, but like the past couple of months, there was a lot of, he's going to be a bust. Like, this kid's a bum, like type stuff on the Bird app. And, it got my hackles up a little bit. And I felt like I needed to, you know, stand up for my dude here. Cause he's going to be a good NFL player. So the short answer, I think gun to my head, I probably have to take Breece Hall ahead most of the time. Could be a stupid value move to take Spiller first. But I think the two have nearly identical chances of success. Even though my model likes Hall better, there's some traits, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this next, that Spiller has that not many people have in the NFL, that I think he has the upside to develop and become a much better player even than he is right now.
Yeah, this is already, we're like four questions in. This is already a pack of great information. Let's talk about his size, because I'm a big fan of his size. 6'1", 225 pounds. That is just a great profile on paper for a three down back. What do you think about this size and how it'll be used in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, two words, workhorse. Yeah. Right? He's got the prototype build. And like you said, he's got a rare pass catching ability at his size. Like, not a lot of 220 pound backs have the open space, open field ability that Spiller has, or the soft hands, or just the really fluid transition to a runner that he has when he catches the ball. Like, he's not the guy that's like staring it down and wrestling it into his body. He's catching and just tucking and making his moves. You know, he's got the thing where he's thinking about his football moves as the ball is entering his hands and kind of planning out his next steps, that you'll see like elite wide receivers or like really elite pass catching backs have that just next step thought as they're going, planning out the next thing they're going to do.
Now, I hit this last year with the rookie profile we did last year. I'm going to hit it again. And I know it's a tough thing to take college tape and try to predict success in the NFL when it comes to this, but it does matter to NFL teams. Any indications about his pass pro ability at all? Any inklings, any insights on his ability to be able to pick up the blitz or protect the quarterback?
Yeah. So you're not going to see staggering amounts of pass protection on his film because he was active in the receiving game. So a lot of times in neutral game situations, you're going to see him splitting out or running routes out of the backfield. But in games that A&M got down, which, again, they won a lot of games in the past 2 years, you know, you will see him, you know, in pass pro, them, you know, sending four guys out and him staying in the backfield. And you'll see reps where he completely stands up a DE. I went through this before the show and watched three or four games of cutups again real quick. I couldn't find a single rep where he really blew a block. He's always looking for a guy to block, you know, and when he gets the guys, like he's stopping him. I didn't see him get run over. Didn't see him get blown up. Didn't see him whiff.
I like that last part you said where he's always looking for a guy to block, because I feel like wide receivers with just gifted talent, whether that's speed or change of direction, the really great ones work on the stuff that they aren't so great at, right? And I feel like good NFL players, especially running backs, is how short their lives can be in the NFL. They know that coming in. So the willingness to block to me is what I want to see, like looking for somebody to put a block on rather than just saying, well, that's not for me. Like, go put a tight end in there. I'll go do my magic out there in the receiving game or something. So that I don't know. I think that's all we can really glean from, you know, a college career. We don't really see enough in that. So I think that was a good insight. Does Spiller have one specific trait that kind of makes him, like, kind of stands out, like, to make him, you know, like, special?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about a lot of his different traits. I know
hour-long
soliloquy of Isaiah Spiller here on his rookie profile. And I'll say this as a quick, like, you know, because we talked about his size and his pass pro. Like, it's not my favorite trait of his, but he's a physical dude. He's good. Seeking contact. He likes to make people miss, but if he can't, he's running through tackles. He's breaking tackles. He's trucking dudes. It's not his first move. It reminds me, and I don't think he's as good as Najee as a prospect, but it reminds me of Najee, where, like, big dude, agile, can make people miss. But when, like, plan A doesn't work, plan B is I'm going to go through you, you know?
Nice.
And I'd say it's that the other part of that I think is what I think gives him the ability to be special in the NFL, because there's not a lot of big guys in the NFL that can move like Spiller. Like, I think Najee is a good comp of that play style, right? Where he is a big dude. Like, I remember in the beginning of, like, scouting season last year, people were like, Najee, power back. He's like, he's not really a power back. Like, he runs like an elusive, you know, like agile, like juke, make and miss guy, to his go-to. And Spiller has that same thing. You know, you turn on any of his games, but like the Arkansas one from this year was really good. The Alabama one from this year, he had a crappy line, but you watch that game and he was making fools of Alabama, you know, linebackers and DBs that are going to be playing in the NFL, in a year or two. And just completely, like catching the ball, like doing a hesitation move, making one guy miss, bursting around another guy. And just for me, it's that like versatility, that agility, that full toolkit of different ways to win confrontations, and that creativity, right, that he has, where it's not just like every time he catches the ball, he's going to lower the boom on someone. He's got a full tool bag, a lot of different ways to win. And like, for me, that sets him apart. There's not a lot of 220-pound guys in the NFL that you can turn on and watch them just completely like juking guys out of their shorts, and there's a few, but they're usually special players that we're talking about being in a certain tier.
Is why I love doing these profiles. I feel like every guest that we have on like can kind of change my opinion in such a short period of time, because, and I know you're going to agree that he has great vision, but I thought that that was where you were going to go with how good his vision is. But you kind of explained that in a variety of ways. Like the way you explained that, not only is he using that vision to do X, Y, or Z, but when that plan fails, he's got plan B, which is just his physical toughness.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. He's got weaknesses too. I don't know if you want me to jump into that right now, but there are plays where like he goes down on first contact that I don't love. There's times where I think he's looking to make things happen when he should just plant the foot and get the 2 yards.
Right.
And like, I think that's what you'll hear people hammer on this stuff for the negatives, but
sure.
I think those are things that he can grow out of. I think those are things he can be coached out of. So I think his weaknesses are things that he absolutely can grow out of, whereas his traits, give him the ability really to become an upper tier player.
I was going to say the weaknesses that you just mentioned do seem as though they're weaknesses that a lot of running backs come into the NFL with that get taught out of. Mm. And that there's particularly that one where you're like, just plant a foot and get 2 yards, man. Like, we got to get a first down. Like, you got get me out of like third and long, like get me yards. I think you mentioned this at the top of the show. What kind of draft capital do you believe NFL teams are going to pay for this player?
I can't see him not going on day two, and right. I'll be shocked if he's not around two pick, somewhere in the top or the middle of the round. I don't see two backs in this class that you can make a strong argument to better than him. I know people love Walker, like Walker, Heisman candidate. Walker is an amazing college running back, and I think he's going to be a good pro, but you just compare the resume of like Hall, Spiller, and Walker. Mm-hmm. And Walker didn't come into the league and destroy as a freshman. Right. Didn't do much as a sophomore, put some nice reps on tape, but it really took him, developing more physically and landing in the right scheme with the right line and, take off. So I can't see two guys going before Spiller. I think him or Breece is the first back off the board. I think the NFL is largely higher on Spiller than the fantasy football community. In early mocks, he was the first back off the board all the time. We start going in our Twitter echo chamber and people forget about that and, get our take lock on one guy because, all the smart guys are saying that that's the guy.
Yeah. I've learned a long time ago that, kind of like you had said about Spiller's early traits, it's like, they're just a piece of the puzzle. You have to like I've listened to a lot more throughout the years, a lot more NFL experts and gotten away from that echo chamber you talked about, because we think we're smarter than everybody else. And the problem is we all want to be in that same opinion state. So it just winds up, you just hear the same thing over and over again, and people just rephrase it a little bit. So it's tough. And I think these profiles go outside that bubble because you don't have me and Swags and we're the only two voices you're hearing. You get to hear from people across the industry on players that they're really passionate about and why. I mean, I just got done two profiles where, and we'll get to this question later, a player that you won't draft in rookie drafts and why. That's going to be a question we ask later. And it's a question I ask in every one of these profiles. Someone had given me a name of one player that actually wound up being somebody's wide receiver one in another profile. So, and when I told him that during the profile, he was just like, that's so awesome. Like, I think that's so cool because we're all looking at the same stuff and a different opinion is awesome. That's where conversations start. That's where debate happens. That's what's fun about this stuff. What is this player ceiling and floor getting back to Spiller?
I mean, I think his ceiling is going to be, and I'm not saying this is the most likely outcome, but his ceiling is he gets passing volume and he's a top six running back, like,
nice,
for the next 5 years. If he gets, you know, 80 targets a year, 90 targets a year, there's no reason he can't do that. Look at the, and you said you've been on Twitter less, but the thing for the past 2 weeks has been like JT or CMC. And, you know, someone posted that if you took away all of Christian McCaffrey's touchdowns from his 2019 season, he would still have scored more points than JT last year.
Wow.
Because in PPR leagues, the 80 receptions just matters that much.
Yeah, they do.
That's why for me, Spiller has the biggest upside of anyone in this class, and, you know, puts him in a really limited small circle of guys that can produce as high as that. His floor is he lands somewhere with a crappy line where he's trying to force things to happen, and bad coaching, doesn't improve on his flaws, trying to do too much, doesn't get the feet discipline he needs. So you'll watch him. Sometimes he's a little wild, winds up off balance, can't chain moves fluidly when he does that. And we're not talking about him as being fantasy relevant in a couple of years. Like, really, it's a much broader spectrum than, you know, Breece Hall.
Sure.
I don't think he'd wash out, but, like, you know, could he be, you know, in like a sub David Montgomery category? Could he be someone that we're disappointed that we spent a top five pick on? Yeah. I mean, even Monty's good now, but, you know, you weren't happy with him his second year. Mm-hmm. You weren't happy with Miles Sanders. We took Miles Sanders in the top two. I think that's his downside. His downside is he's a low-end RB2, RB3, and looking at getting competition in his backfield in a couple of years. Or he lands somewhere that he can't take the starting role.
So funny that you mentioned Miles Sanders, because as you were describing, like, all those things that would take him to his floor, like the coaching, the use, and I was thinking, it sounds a lot like Miles Sanders.
Geez.
I'm still a big believer in Miles Sanders' talent. I just feel like he's might need to leave that place.
I've been buying Sanders up for 2 years.
Nice. Well, maybe. Yeah. So, favorite spot in the NFL for Spiller to go?
I just want him to go somewhere where he's going to have a reasonable chance of seizing the lead role right off the rip. Houston could be a good spot. Houston's as much as spot. Like it's kind of a disaster in a lot of ways, but they're going to run the ball.
Miami. You know what I mean?
Did they bring back Cully? Oh no, Lovie Smith, right? He's going to want to pound the rock, right?
Yep.
So I think that's an acceptable place. Davis Mills, not a highly mobile quarterback.
No. Nope.
Going to be willing to check down. You're going to split Spiller out wide. You know, that gives him the pass catching upside. I would also think that, I don't know. I mean, he could be okay on the Seahawks, but they're going to run a committee. You know, I don't know if I love that. And I even have a fear that he's going to land on like the Jets and wind up in a full-time share with Carter. Yeah. I think that's a realistic outcome that they're looking for help. Or, you know, he can land on the Bills and wind up in a timeshare with Singletary, who's played very well recently. And that, again, is, I think, at best a mediocre landing spot, because is he going to get the goal line work? Is he going to get the receiving work that he needs to hit his ceiling? I don't know.
Maybe Miami?
I like Miami. They did want Javonte last year.
Yeah, they did.
They said that they would have taken Javonte, but he went a couple pieces before him, a couple picks before him.
They might be chasing this year and getting a running back in the second round. I think they have 2 second-round picks.
Mm. Finaro, I like this.
I think that would be a nice spot for the opportunity you want him to have. All right, so where in rookie drafts do you see him going? It's early in the process. This is not fair, but just where in rookie drafts? Maybe would you draft him?
There was drafts earlier this year before I figured out that everybody else hates Spiller. I was taking him, you know, as the first running back off the board. I've done a bunch of early mocks. Frankly, most of these quarterbacks terrify me. I don't think any one of them is a lock to be an elite NFL quarterback. I think they all have good traits and more warts than most of the quarterbacks in the recent classes. I've been doing mocks and taking Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson at like 1 and 2, you know, I'm more comfortable taking Spiller than I am taking a lot of those players. So like me personally, I'm probably going to take him as a top 4 or 5 pick, even in Superflex. Where have I been seeing him go? Where do I think he's going to go? I think you're going to get him where you got ETN last year. You're going to get him at 7. You're going to get him at 8. Maybe even lower. You could be getting him like near the turn in certain drafts. If you're in a league where people are like quarterbacks, no matter what.
That's why it's such an unfair question to ask you now.
Yeah. I mean, I've been flustered, like doing these mocks. Like I do the Dynasty Nerds ones, I do a bunch of other ones. And I'm like, I can't bring myself to take Matt Corral at the 1-1 right now. Like he could like land horribly. And like, he could be the Zach Wilson of this year. You know what I mean? Sam Howell, I think he goes in the first round still, but a lot of people are talking about him not being a day one pick.
Right.
And it's just like, that's murder. You know, and like Malik Willis, like every tool in the world, but you watch a lot of his tape from Liberty and like, you see the tools, but you see the problems too. You see why the NFL guys are mocking him at like the 28th, 29th pick right now. I would be happy if I'd taken Lamar Jackson at 1-1 back in the day. I think Lamar was a lot more developed coming out than Willis is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a head scratcher for me right now. Finero, tell me what to do.
I'll tell you what, I think you're right. I think early signs say that a lot of these positional wide receiver and running backs are going to get pushed up the board because these quarterbacks and Superflex are going to fall down the board. And I think you're right. I think it's going to depend on your draft. There are just people that believe that positional scarcity and value, it's the cheapest place you can get a quarterback is in a rookie draft, that are just going to push them up again. And you're going to see that in the NFL too. You're going to see that in the NFL. We saw average quarterbacks get picked number 1 and number 2 overall in NFL drafts, get picked in the top 10 picks in NFL drafts for the same reason you're going to do it in rookie picks or rookie drafts, because how else are you going to get them?
Yeah.
It's the only place you can get them. Unless you're going to trade a bunch of really good players to get them, and teams don't want to do that. And fantasy managers don't want to do that. So, but you're right. I mean, this class feels like there's a lot of quarterbacks, and it's tough. Like, oh my God, I feel like the 102 or the 103, right? You're like, do I really like reach for this quarterback that might just be like, okay, or do I get like Breece Hall? Or in your case, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that you would pick Spiller that early, but maybe. I mean, there's a lot of wide receivers that we're not going to talk about because we're all running backs tonight. But the point is, I think it's going to be harder, unlike last year's class, where so many quarterbacks pushed down the wide receivers and running backs to value at the turn, right? You were getting Waddle down at the turn. So, like, now it's kind of flipping a little bit where – maybe one of those quarterbacks work out, right? Maybe one of them winds up being worth a first round rookie pick, but which one?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are going to have the recency bias thing from last year where people took T-Law and they took Fields.
Yeah.
Took Wilson. Zero production. Did not work out for you.
It did like, not work out.
If your plan was even Fields, I think he's the one that like you have the most signal is going to be okay. Yeah. If your plan was to start him last year, you did not do okay.
That's a really good point. Before we move on to our non-related Spiller question, so I have two to take us out on the show tonight. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners about Spiller before we get out of Spiller?
Yeah, I mean, I hit most of like my big points on him, but you know, I'll just say this: like his data profile, it's very, very good, right? Like just sub my elite tier. You know, he's got points like over 2 yards per team play. You know, over 4 yards per contact for attempt, over 50 broken tackles in his best season. Like these are really good data points. So like most guys with these data points succeed in the NFL. And with pass catching upside, talked about his power. We've talked about his agility. Like this is a guy that's going to succeed in the NFL. And this is a guy that NFL draft Knicks and NFL GMs are already high on. We're all talking about the Senior Bowl guys right now. It's Damian Pierce and Rashad White. And like, I like those guys. If they get day 2 capital, they'll be lucky. Spiller, like, don't overthink this. Spiller is at worst the second best running back in this class. You all have the same, you know, like cognitive, you know, failure of like overvaluing new information.
Yeah,
right? Do it. It's just you a normal it. Thing. Does it make us dumb? Does it make us bad dynasty players? Like as human beings, we do this, and it's really easy to do that. And sometimes you get a step back, and just look at the whole picture.
Overvaluing new information. That's good advice, not to overvalue new information. We all have a tendency to do that. So moving away from Spiller, who is your guy in this year's draft? Can't miss, hang your hat on him. You don't need to dive deep. Just give me a name where you're like, psh, this guy can't miss.
Yeah. The two prospects that I have is just like absolute lock. Can't miss guys is going to be Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall. They both just nice. Like check every box for me. Elite film, elite data. Treylon Burks, too, checks all the boxes. Little rougher. I'm probably taking Wilson first, but I'm not going to be surprised if Burks has a higher ceiling. But, yeah, those are the three guys. The two guys, Hall and Wilson. Burks, I'm stoked about. Spiller, I'm stoked about. Love all of them. Don't look back. Give me them at any cost. Happy to have them.
One guy you won't touch. But everyone will overdraft.
That's a tough one because I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but like all of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, fair enough.
All of them. You know what I mean? There's not one of them, like we talked about, that I think just absolutely won't work out. But like Pickett is a complete dud until his senior year. Howell, like inconsistent, spraying the ball at the Senior Bowl. Producer, you know, Willis, just processing issues, accuracy issues. At Liberty, Ritter, like, again, like, you know, some really, really great traits and then like some failure to process, some accuracy issues, like none of them are locks, all going to get overdrafted, I think. And then on the wide receiver end, I think Olave was a great college receiver who's going to be a good NFL player, but probably not someone that we should be crawling over each other to get in rookie drafts. I fear that I'm less certain, but I think David Bell might be that too. Mm-hmm. He's got the as good ball skills as any receiver in the NFL. I'm just not sure if he's going to get open, like NFL open. Sorry, that's way more than one person.
No, man, we call that bonus material. Eric, thank you so much. I could not have done this show without you. Please tell everyone where they can find you, your content, anything else that you have coming up that you want to promote.
Yeah, you can get me hanging out in the Twitter streets at EK Baller. I am always happy to talk football, shitpost, obsessively join dynasty startups as long as they're best ball. All my work is on Dynasty Nerds. I get rookie profiles coming out. The other big seasonal articles I do every year are the Intro to Dynasty Guide, which is just your Bible, how to win a dynasty, whether you're a new player, whether you've been around. I guarantee you there's some stuff in there that's going to be useful for you because it's all the things I've gleaned from people smarter than me. And then I'll have an article coming out a little bit later this offseason, late round players that hit, and recommendations for this year's class. And that's a really cool one. Last year, Elijah Mitchell was on my list for running backs. Oh, nice. Some guys didn't hit, but you know, they're dart throws, right? And then I did start a Patreon this year. Things that are on Patreon you can't get anywhere else are all of my data scouting for wide receivers, all of my data scouting for running backs, all of my data scouting for quarterbacks, which has been producing really, really good, really exciting cohorts that seems really translatable to NFL draft capital, which is really cool and exciting. And then also all my Devy work. I've got freshman scouting guide that is on my Patreon. Wow. And that is Patreon EK Baller. Get on there.
You are a busy man, Eric. Holy
moly. Trying to keep up with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you lapped me, but that's all right. Thanks again, Eric. And thank you, our listeners, for allowing us to hit your ears. This is the Rookie Fever Podcast. Please do not forget to rate and review. And please, please do not forget to be awesome. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago now.
Who got the 101 scouting? It's never done this to before and run. I told you anyone. Silence speech just on real landing spot. Not ideal. Wait, when's this breakout? A full rookie fever stage.
Romeo loved Juliet. Juliet, she felt the same. When he pulled his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my friend. I'll give a fever. When we kiss it, fever with our flame in you. Fever, I'm a fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soup.
Got the fever, cause I got the fever, now you got the fever, so she got the fever, and he got the fever, no cure for the fever, so let's feed the fever, thank God for the fever,
thank God for the fever.
Now you got the fever, 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 now you got the fever.